I'm Dr. G. Davis, and welcome to It's Complicated. Listen, we have an amazing show tonight. In fact, I need your undivided attention for the next 60 minutes because we've been talking all month long about bringing awareness to domestic violence and breast cancer, and we have so much more to talk about, so let's go ahead and get started. I want to just jump right into this because tonight the show is Locker Room Talk Part 2. And we did a little twist. As we left off last week, we were talking about politics and this whole Donald Trump thing. And so one of the questions that we posed was, are members covering up for their leaders? And so we want to deal with tonight, we want to deal with church scandals, lies, and breasts. Church scandals, lies, and breasts. And so we got a lot to talk about. So if you're not sitting down, you may need to take a seat and have something to drink because you're going to be in for a treat tonight because we got a lot to talk about. So let's go ahead and get started. Before we get started, though, let's go ahead and introduce our panelists, our guest panelists tonight. All the way right here from Orlando, Florida, we have on the phone with us, Bruce Marshall is in the building.
Good evening, everyone.
We also have the amazing Christina White in the building.
Hello, and good evening.
Awesome. And then we have the amazing Tracy Bradford in the building as well.
Hello, everyone. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Listen, we got a lot to talk about, so let's just jump right into this. One of the things I realized this week is so much has transpired as it relates to not just the locker room talk, but, you know, as I said earlier, breast cancer awareness and domestic violence. One of the stats I came across this week, I was just absolutely flabbergasted about this stat. And I read it says that according to the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control, over 45%, you guys, over 45% of women in the church around the globe have experienced sexual or physical abuse at least once in their lifetime. I'm going to say that again. Over 45% of women in the church around the globe have experienced sexual or physical abuse at least once in their lifetime. However, over 35% of men in the church have experienced sexual abuse or physical abuse at least once in their lifetime. My first question to you guys is this. One of the things that I've been in church all my life, church baby. My dad is a pastor, and so I've been around the church a long, long time, long, long time. And so one of the three things that I know church folk don't like to talk about is money. We don't like to talk about abuse. And then last but not least, we don't like to talk about sex and sexuality. But what seems to be, I want to ask a question tonight, and my first question to you guys is what, and I want to deal with what do you think your perspective is? Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be the truth, but I just kind of want to hear what the census is about this particular subject as we talk about domestic violence. My question is what seems to be the church's response to domestic and sexual violence? And everybody don't speak at once. Everybody don't speak at once. It doesn't matter.
Well, this is Tracy. I actually think that I'm glad we're tapping into subjects that are very out of the box for the church. I think it's something that is long needed because we don't talk about it. There are a lot of things within the four walls of the church that we don't shed light on. And I know of believers. I know of people who are like yourself. I'm a PK. I've been in the church all my life. I know what it looks like, smells like, wrote the book, the chapter. I've seen it all. And so I know that there are believers out there. I know believers just from growing up who would go to church, pay their tithes, serve in the house of God, but they suffer in silence as it pertains to domestic violence. They've suffered in silence as it pertains to sexual violence as well. I think that there's a lack of education in the church as it pertains to it. The community has done a very good job, but the church should be part of the community, and they should be part of that solution. And I don't see that taking place. I think it's still something that is still very taboo in the church. I believe that we're breaking some things down. My church, the church that I'm affiliated with, shout out to my church, Majestic Life Ministries, Pastor Reva Tim, there are a lot of things that we have in place that is very out of the box. We just don't believe in doing church as usual. And so when you step into most churches and there is a spirit of religion, you will have these things that are still not being tapped on, that are not being exposed in the body of Christ. So I think that it's something that we still need to work on. And I think there needs to be more platforms such as this, having open discussions about what is really taking place in most homes.
Right. Awesome. Awesome. Bruce, what do you think?
Well, this is a tough subject, I can tell you. For me, I haven't suffered through that myself. I do know people that have. In my family, there's some extended family members. And I'm the kind of guy that if I see a woman being assaulted, I'll have to take action. So I've been in some precarious situations regarding that. Now, as bringing it home to the church, because I'm one of those kind of people that I just feel like when it's time for constructive criticism, it's time, whatever the situation, I need to be able to take mine, and everyone should be able to take theirs, and the church should be able to accept the idea that they have dropped the ball on a lot of things. And some of it is purposely. As you said, we don't want to address some of these things. Recently, right. let's go to politics, talking about the charismatic, fundamental Christians, the right wing Christians that support Donald Trump, yeah. and they defend furiously, ferociously, right. I should say. Donald Trump, and then you call them out and say, how can you, as a Christian, defend this guy? In what aspect can you defend this guy? And then they will say something to the effect, well, it's better than the other option. Okay, yeah. So in other words, simply because it's better than the other option, that's their argument, that it's okay to defend a guy who says to attack people, that he personally will touch a woman in a way that feels whenever he feels he says I'll pay for your lawyer fees if you get in trouble for beating up someone. He provokes people. He's very divisive. So this gives a certain fuel to a certain mindset. There are certain members of who feel like women are inferior. So this is not just a physical thing. Now, I'm not really referring. It's difficult for me to imagine a man being physically abused, but I know it does happen. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but I'm speaking more to the women of our society, the softer sex, when it comes to being violated by men. You know, that happens a lot more often. And so for me, with these people who are have some type of mental problem, and they have a sense of a superiority over men and other groups too. We have to address it in the correct way, and we have to make sure that they can talk about it and that it's okay. You know, it's just like illness is also a part of it, and a lot of women suffer along with mental illness and depression who have been abused. And so these are undercurrents of our society that we try to just brush under the carpet. And I think that we do have to have dialogue about this. It's more and more. And it's on the forefront now, I think so.
definitely. And guys, I think Bruce hit it right on the nail. A lot of this stems from people who are suffering from mental illness, people who are what we call narcs, people who have personality disorders. And this is a lot of this is common too with people who've served in the military at some period of time. I'll never forget, and this is just me being transparent, I never forget back home in Seattle, you know, my dad was very, very abusive. He was very, very abusive towards my mother, and I will share her story in a few, but about maybe 5 years later after my mother passed, and, you know, for years, you know, I just believe people have mastered wearing this church face. You know, they got it down pat. And so all of these years, and I went to a very spiritual Pentecostal church and a church that spoke in tongues and believed in the Holy Ghost, believed in deliverance and all this. And I'm wondering, with all of this Holy Ghost that everybody has in this church, how come nobody can see what's really going on? You know, my dad was a great tither. He was, you know, dropping thousands and thousands of dollars into the church, helping fix the church up, you know. But what nobody could see was the mental abuse, the physical abuse that even his new wife was facing. And so, unfortunately, my mother was not from the streets. She was a missionary and you know, she believed in being submissive. The wife that he married later on after she had passed, she was straight from the streets, you know, straight hood. You know, I will cut you in a minute. And so I would never forget we were in rehearsal, and this was after rehearsal, and all of a sudden we hear all of this loud noise, and we hear doors slamming and screaming. We're like, what in the devil? And lo and behold, it's my dad and his new wife fighting. They're fist fighting.
Wow.
Her clothes is ripped off.
Wow.
My dad literally has her hemmed up on the door, and she's cussing. And this is all in the church. I mean, there's lots and lots of people. And I don't know, because, again, I was in rehearsal, so I don't know how this conversation transpired. But whatever he said, you know, or whatever she said was enough for him to just snap. And I think my dad forgot where he was at, and he just totally blacked out. And I think, you know, being from the street, you know, she was egging him on. And you know, I think she was saying stuff like, well, hit me then, hit me. And so I think he just honestly blacked out, and he just went for it. And so the police, of course, was called. But for the first time, guys, they seen my dad in a whole different light. This was at this time he was a deacon. At this time he was a deacon, and so they're like, well, wait a minute. This ain't the same. Wait a minute now. This ain't the same guy we see shouting on Sunday and teaching Bible study. This is not the same. Who is this dude? And so the very fact that, you know, people love, and I believe with all my heart that we've mastered how to wear the church face, when to put it on and when not to put it on. My question to you guys is this, is why do you think, again, with all of the spiritual things that we do and we've been taught to do, how come we can't see the natural stuff that has happened in the church?
Okay, I'll take this one. It's Christina. can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I think that we do see the natural. It's just, like you say, it's swept under the rug. Because here's the reality. Before we're pastors, before we're saints, before we're deacons and mothers and ushers and all of that, we're men and women. So we want to appear oblivious to things that are going on in the church, but I can honestly tell you that everything that we see in the open, it's they see it too. It's just,
right.
I feel that it's kind of swept under the rug a little bit because we get to a point where it's like, who are we going to tell? The mother doesn't want to tell the pastor because the pastor's probably involved. The pastor, you know, you're supposed to go to the head, but we see this. We see this stuff. So I don't think it's not to a point where we don't see it. It's just that we sweep it under the rug because we're supposed to walk a certain way. We're supposed to talk a certain way. We're supposed to be a certain way when we're in the church. So we have resources that can that we are afraid to go to. You know, we as a people, we've always, Steve Harvey mentioned it one time. We don't do counseling. You know, we don't want to touch counseling. We have all these resources, but we don't want to bring certain people in our world. But the reality is, we know everybody goes through things. People go through things, and you have these resources that are available to us, but we don't want to reach out. So I don't think that it's just we're going in with blinders that, oh, nothing goes on in the church. No, we know it going in the church because half of the time it's going on in your house.
Right.
But we don't want to speak up. We want to brush it under the rug because we're supposed to act a certain way in the church.
The way that I was, this is Tracy, the way I was kind of brought up, I remember growing up, my father's a pastor, and I remember growing up, just growing up in a light full of pressure. It just felt like everyone, like I had to be this perfect person. And I think that the way that, especially for those that may be connected to leadership or related to those that are in leadership, there's this silent protocol that is expected of us. This silent space that we have to portray, this mask that we have to portray, like it's all good, and it's not. And one of the things that I want to shed light on in regards to abuse, because it's not just physical, but there are a lot of Christians today that are facing and dealing with emotional abuse. It's not even, sometimes we think about the domestic abuse, but we don't think about the emotional abuse that a lot of women and even some men are subjected to as well. And so there's just this mask that goes on, because I don't believe, like Christina was saying, I don't believe we go in with our blinders on. You know.
Yeah.
You know. And people talk. And here's the thing about church folks, nobody can keep their mouth shut.
Sure can.
Keep real. Something happens behind the scenes and we find out about it and maybe no one says anything on the pulpit. Trust and believe it's being talked about in the parking lot of the church.
Right. Or even on the next pew.
Right. Just keep it real. I mean, some of the biggest soap operas that take place is right in the church.
Right.
Dr. G, you mentioned something about your dad. You said, you know, he was a tither. He helped fix the church up. And one of the out of the three things you named, one of them that we kind of are, you know, don't want to talk about is money. So as long as he's a contributing factor, we don't want to go to him and say, well, Deacon so-and-so, you know, we heard you was, you know, very violent towards sister such-and-such, because then we feel that money going to stop, you see? So sometimes we see it, but we may not want to make it known that we see it because of other reasons.
Absolutely. Listen, for those who are just joining the call, listen, we are talking about Locker Room Talk Part 2. This is about church scandals, lies, and breasts. And so this is an interesting topic because, again, this is something that, you know, you don't hear on a day-to-day basis, but we need to deal with this. And I think just the fact that this month is October and the rep even brings the ability to talk about the subject and leave it even more deeper than we have. I want to take a question from the inbox that I got this week, and the question reads, if the church is our refuge from the storm, why are we drowning after we enter? Is the church our demise? I'll read it one more time. If the church is the refuge from the storm, why are we drowning after we enter? Is the church our demise?
Well, this is what I would have to say. A lot of times we look at the church as the four walls within the building, and that is a building. We call it the church, but we as believers are the church. And so when it's all said and done, it goes back to everyone has to be accountable for themselves. Everyone has to be accountable for their own actions, their integrity, their character, how they carry themselves, how they treat one another, how they love on one another. And so that's the first thing that I would say in regards to that question. It's because a lot of times we put the church, we put the pastor on this pedestal like they're God, and they're not God. Only God can be your refuge. That's what the Word of God says, is He is our refuge. And so we have to change our mindset, and we have to understand that people are going to be people. We are imperfect people, but we serve a perfect God that has graced us to be able to do the things that we do for the kingdom. But it does not mean that we don't make mistakes. It doesn't mean that we don't do what the Word of God instructs us to do. And so it's important that as believers and those that are looking up, and I see this a lot in new believers, or I see this a lot in individuals who have suffered from church hurt. They did not have their eyes focused on God. They had their eyes focused on who serving with them.
You're absolutely right. And so the issue is that for those who are not spiritually mature to recognize right. that they are the church,
right?
And they ask this type of question. You know, it's not a big mystery that you could not see why they would come to this conclusion. Like, I experienced hell in the world, then I got to come to church and experience some more drama, some more hell. I'm out to just stay in the world. And so a lot of people are frustrated, and this is kind of the other reason why internet church, online church has been so popular, because people don't have to come to a building, and they can stay at home, not have to worry about the drama. They can pay their tithes online. They can pay their offering online and not have to deal with people and hearing lies and rumors and drama and still have church and feel like they're going to church. And so, you know, this is a subject, guys, that I think we need to talk about, because a lot of people, again, you know, we're not really seeing it for where it is. And I understand the spiritual part. Yes, we are the church. But then you have people who all they know is church, right? And, yes, I know I'm the church, but at the same time, when is everybody else around me going to get this? When is the light bulb going to go off around the people who's around me? And I get that I'm the church, but, you know, this person over here acting up, this person over here acting a fool. And so every time we come to church, it's always something. I was talking to a pastor in Seattle, and I used to ask him, I said, man, why do you always say that? And the thing that he used to always say is, he used to say, before he walked into church, he used to say, ay, ay, ay. Why do you always say that? He said, because every time I come into church, I always say, ay, 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 ay. It's always something. And so I'm thinking to myself, here's a pastor that's building the ministry, and instead of having joy on his heart, he's already anticipating something to go down today. Somebody ain't going to get along.
Right.
Somebody ain't going to speak to somebody at church. Somebody going to park in somebody's parking space. And so he's already anticipating the worst. And so if he, as the leader, is doing that, I can only imagine what the members were doing at the same time. All right? So let's move on to the next question. Next question is, guys, do you believe that the church has hid secrets from their members in order to protect their pastor in the church? Now, this is significant because this whole thing with Donald Trump, I mean, it's out there now, right? And so these women, what we didn't know is last week it was just his confession. Now, since we came together, since we've departed, and now we've came back, now there's been, what, 18 women now, I think? 12, 18?
Yeah.
That's quite a few.
And
yeah.
So now all these women now have came out the woodwork and say, listen, this man has abused me, yada, yada, yada. And so now it's not just he say, she say. Now these people are coming out the woodwork. And so, and again, as what Bruce was saying earlier, you got supporters of Trump who are still sticking by Trump no matter what. Now that they have proof, it's like they're all lying. It's a setup. The timing is wrong. And so if we relate this to the church, do you think the same type of spirit and the same type of situations are happening in the church today?
Absolutely.
Absolutely,
yes.
I hate to say it, but
I'm talking about secrets that we can't let there's no way we can let everybody know about this.
Right.
Let me say, I think I'm the oldest one on the call. I think I'm 53. So let me just say that unequivocally, that has been the nature of the church growing up. And it's just like what you said you experienced with your dad. And you said he was a deacon and then he became a pastor.
Right.
So, yeah, that's in the norm, man. I grew up in Louisiana, and I'm not going to call any names, but I knew of, I'm talking about National Baptist preachers who were the head of organizations that had mistresses. This was a very normal thing when I went to Southern University. It's when my eyes were opened, you know. And so I left the Baptist church, in fact. You know, I'm back now. But I did leave the church time. And suddenly, for us to be in a hypocritical position about things, because we have our own problems. As we know, situation in Atlanta with a very well-known pastor. People knew about that way before we knew about that. It's something that I think it's part of what the Bible talks about, the wheat and the tare. He's speaking about the church. He's not talking about the world. He's talking about the church. He's gonna tear the church up because we're the ones that know better and we don't do better. And
so
we don't hold ourselves accountable.
So let me ask you this then. If that being the case, is the church wrong for hiding secrets?
In my opinion, yes,
Tracy, is the church wrong for hiding secrets?
Well, it's you know.
The answer is yes.
I just hit me straight up. Just yes or no? Is the church wrong for hiding secrets?
Yes.
The church is really wrong.
Yes, it is. The church is wrong for hiding secrets.
That's my girl. That's
okay.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
We're supposed to be open, truthful, and honest. You're setting an example. So
right.
If it's tell the truth. The word says the yeses are yeses and your noes are noes. There's no gray line. It's black, it's white. Period. Say what it is, put it out on the table, and we need to be an example. I'm done. I'm out.
Okay, right. That was my girlfriend, Cecily. That wasn't me. but yes,
She's right.
But this is the reason why.
Right.
This is even more reason why is because when we're not truthful, we're operating in the spirit of deceit. We're operating in – it's just that clear. I mean, I can't make it any plainer than that. We're operating in the spirit of deceit, and it taints the people of God when we do that. And so, you know, you can't expect – you know, the pastor cannot expect for the members to be truthful and honest about what they're doing if it's not even coming from the head. Come on, somebody.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
So.
Sure. All right, so. so the secrets, now, the thing about this whole question is, is that, guys, there's been secrets that people had died and went to their grave carrying that most people don't even know, you know. And I think about most of these churches too, where, you know, your great-great-great-grandmother bought a brick and your grandfather bought a pew. And, you know, I'm talking about old, old generation and just the stuff that they covered up and nobody knows about even to this day. It, these secrets, guys, are, to be honest with you, they're happening. And it seems like now with social media, with cameras now they're becoming even more visible than ever, as we've seen with the Donald Trump situation, as we've seen with, you know, prominent pastors who have fell from grace. And you know, this is an ongoing occurrence. One of the things that I was always taught in church, and especially as being a leader in the church, and one of the things they always taught me was, they said, listen,
what's going to come to the light. What, that's what they
well,
thought.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, that too. But one of the other things they always taught me was, is that men have always fallen for two things, the girl and the gold. And so they said, be careful when you get into leadership positions that you don't fall for the girls and you don't fall for the gold, meaning the money. And so I always kept that in my mindset because I've seen so many pastors, so many ministers, so many leaders fall because of money, you know, infidelity, this, that, and the third. And once they was found in that, it was, you know, hush, hush, don't tell nobody, you know, let's keep this between us. I know, Lord Jesus, I'm going to get in trouble. I know pastors in the city who have put members away and sent them elsewhere, relocated them, because they did not want their secret to get out.
Mm-hmm.
They were pregnant, and the pastor sent them away, get out of Florida quick, and relocated them and have put them away. There's other situations where, and we actually did a show about this, talking about, the show was called Cover Girls, and there, believe it or not, there are pastors who are paying women to pretend that they are first lady material, only to, and these women are getting paid, and I'm not talking about no chump change. I'm talking about, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a month to portray the first lady and to have this image for the church. And so what happens is after the church, they go back home, and she'll go back to her house, and he'll go to his, and in his home is another man, and he's in a relationship with another man, and he's getting paid to become a cover girl so that he doesn't lose his image in the community, his image in the church, his church period for that matter. And this is what you call cover girls. So there's a lot of hidden secrets that people have no idea about. And one thing I know about leadership is that most of the stuff, you know, you don't see as a member in the pew. But the moment you become a leader, my God.
No, and it's not even just leadership. Yeah, it's not even just leadership. I remember seeing a lot when I was a child, and it was very confusing because in my head I was thinking, but y'all save. We save. You're supposed to be saved. And so it's very conflicting. It's very confusing. I mean, a lot of people don't understand what it means to be in leadership. I'm a leader in my church, and with that comes a huge amount of responsibility, but it comes with an amount of accountability as well. And that's part of the problem, actually, Dr. G, is the fact that there are a lot of leaders, head leaders, they have no accountability over them. They have no covering over them. Right. That's some of it. Or they're not forthcoming about, you know, about the things that they're dealing with. When I was asked to become a leader from my by my pastor, and I actually sat down with her, she asked me this question. She asked me, she said, if you saw me out in public doing something inappropriate, would you have a problem with contacting our covering? And meaning the person, you know, our spiritual father who oversees our church. And I looked at her, and she said, would you have a problem with it? And she was straight up, like, serious.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I wouldn't. And so that told me right then and there her expectation of what she's expecting of me. If I ever see her out of character as a pastor,
right.
And in leadership, we're held to a higher standard. We, you know, too much is given, much is required. And so I think that a lot of times that's where we lose it sometimes. We forget that other people are watching us. It's not even just our peers, but the generation that's coming up, they're watching us as well. They don't miss a beat either.
Right.
And that same mess carries on to the next generation.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, Tracy, because that was going to be my next question. If you knew your pastor, I don't care, the church mother, the deacon, usher, whoever, was in error, would you correct them? Or would you bring it to someone's attention? That was going to be my next question. And I guess you answered that. Is there anything, let me ask this then. Is there any secret or any fault that you would not say anything about?
I'm a firm believer that, you know, I don't believe that you go over anyone's head. You give them an opportunity to correct and clarify. You know, sometimes we have busybodies in the church that just like starting stuff. And so instead of going to the person or to the source of what might be happening, we might get a little messy and go over and we start gossiping. And that's where you have to really question your intention, your motives. Sometimes the motives are not correct.
Sure.
But if
this is an ongoing thing, though, would you correct it?
That's different. Yeah, that's different. I would correct it. I would sit down. And I don't have a problem. I have a great relationship with my pastor. So I wouldn't have a problem having a conversation at all.
Well, I mean, and that's cool because you got a lot of people who unfortunately, they don't have access to their pastor. He or she
that's
is untouchable. They don't have that communication, you know, pretty much, you know.
Well, how do you guys feel about that? Because I feel that that is, in my opinion, I mean, my church is really growing. And so,
yeah.
I mean, it just so happened that I started with the ministry when it first started. And so I do have access to my pastor. But there are other members who probably, you know, don't know her the way I know her. But I don't know if I could be part of a ministry where I don't have access to my pastor, where I can't, and I see that a lot. I don't know what it is, but growing up, when you and I were growing up, you didn't really see that in the church. Everyone knew each other. You know, the pastors, you know, walked down the aisles. They were, you know, mingling with the congregation. But you see a lot of pastors, they go on the pulpit, they preach, and when they're done preaching, they out.
Right, and Tracy, I think that's because some of these pastors they have a different agenda, right? Like you say, when we were growing up, we were not knowing your pastor or speaking with your pastor. That was like unheard of. But you get you have pastors in these mega churches, and basically they have members that they probably could, if they ran into them at Publix, they wouldn't know who they are. Because they don't have any type of interaction. So some of these pastors, they have an agenda. Their agenda is not to be that pastor. You know, they're on a different level. They're on a different tilt. They have other things in their head and in their mind going on that, you know, they're not trying to interact with their members.
So then what do you do then? So, you know, if you have a pastor who's untouchable, and it's you know, monkey see is not what monkey do, you know, don't do as I say, just do what I'm telling
you. You know
you
what?
Do.
I think that question is in the eye of the beholder, because you know what's right for me or what I feel may be the right way to go. You may not feel, you know, for me, I'm like Tracy. I'm not going to be a part of a church where I don't know the head of the church. The God is the head of the church, but I don't know the leader. I don't know who's leading that church, who I'm following behind. I'm not going to be a member of that church. I'm not. Yeah. But Sister Patterson right here, that might not bother her, you know. As long as she coming to church, she getting her word, and she may know the pastor just by his last name, may not even know what the pastor's first name is. That may work for her. So I think that's a question that's kind of it depends on the person. It depends on the individual. It depends on what you're seeking, what you're looking for. But for me, it wouldn't work.
But see, the other issue, though, is now you got people who are, you know, close to the pastor. And the problem is, Tracy and Christina, they are too close to the pastor. They've become too familiar, and now they're trying to be slick. And you know what I mean. And they're not just trying to be on the pastor and member relationship. They're trying to take this thing to a whole nother level, and they think because they've been there for so long, they've established this rapport and they've established this relationship that they can try their pastor and he or she won't do nothing because we've been knowing each other for a long time and, you know, bump the title, you know, we got history together. So you don't say that, I don't say nothing.
Well, there's this thing that it takes one time. So all it takes is one time, and once you get put in check, usually it don't happen again. So you may feel that way, but until it happens and you actually cross that path and you actually try that pastor, his reaction is gonna make a world of difference. You know, that's gonna be the make or break point, because how he reacts to that is what matters. You know, I tell my kids all the time, you know, you can't control what people say to you and how people say things to you, but you can control your reaction. So if he is reciprocal to whatever they, you know, he reciprocates to whatever the vibe that they're giving off, then all that does is open the door for something else and something else and something else. Because trust me, people will put you in their place, in your place, and if he doesn't reciprocate, then you know how to, you know, move forward with that. But it's going to be based off of his reaction, the pastor's his or her reaction.
I want to piggyback on that. I also really feel that is something that an individual has to have within themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I used to oversee the hospitality department at my church, and so I was always behind the scenes, in the green room with my pastor, you know, whenever we had special guests. So I always was near her when she had dinners. I had to coordinate those dinners. And so there was always this certain level, number one, privacy that I had to automatically have in place as it pertains to that, you know, discreetness as it pertains to it. But behind the scenes, even though she was my pastor, there were a lot of times she would joke with me, she would make fun, or we would joke, or, you know, just have our little moments or whatever. But I never crossed the line as if she was my friend. She's not my friend.
Right.
She's my pastor.
Right.
And I think that's where you got to really understand the roles. My girlfriend, Cecily, just chimed in. Her and my pastor have a very good relationship. But she respects her as her pastor. She knows how to separate the two. There are a lot of people who don't know how to do that. And so, like Christina was saying, you have to establish, you know, I run a community, and I have employees. We have great relationships. We might joke and die, but I have to establish my relationship or establish what the bar is going to look like as the employer, as the boss, and you are the employees of this organization. Don't get it twisted, because I'll check you. And so if that is not set in stone, and if the pastor doesn't know how to establish those boundaries, then she or he will have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, we got about 10 minutes left on the show, and there's one more other question I want us to address, and that is this thing with the church where there seem to be an emergence of pastors who are not married, but they're single. And And because
Jesus.
Of that,
Lord.
Because of that, now I remember as a child, you know, I pretty much can count on my hand how many pastors were single when I was growing up. Now,
Lord.
You know, I don't even have enough hands to count. But my point is with most of these pastors being single, right?
Mm.
But most of the pastors being single, and all, right? Is it very clear to the members of these particular churches that my pastor is absolutely living right, living holy, and my pastor is practicing celibacy? Listen. We need to talk about this because this is an issue. Because you got people in the church who are struggling as singles, and they trying to figure out how in the world, Pastor, are you making it all these years and months and weeks, and you don't, you always smiling and cheese. You always smiling and cheating every time you come to church. You ain't never upset, mad, and frustrated. What are you on?
I think the vet on the call should take that question.
Bruce.
It's not just me. My pastor, she's single. She's not married. It's both.
I will say this.
It's both. You got men.
Yeah, it is both, and I know a handful. And what I also know is the handful that I do know of, and I'm not, you know, putting anybody, you know, the handful that I do know of, it's been because of infidelity on the other one's part. So, or maybe on their part, some type of infidelity where, like, really outside that something we wouldn't think would, you know what I mean? That. Like this, what this whole topic is kind of geared around. You know, we went, oh, that's the pastor. The pastor wouldn't do that. But right. The few that I know are on that kind of that. So, I mean, I believe there are. It's never all, right? It may be the majority, but it's never all. Can some live that life in total celibacy? Yeah, they can.
Okay, but this is my question, though. Do you believe your pastor, if your pastor was single, do you believe honestly that your pastor is living a celibacy lifestyle?
Well, my pastor better be in a celibacy situation.
I'm just saying. Do you honestly believe?
Tracy has a pastor that's single, so she's saying
yes. My pastor is very.
My pastor is single.
Yeah, I have to say that my pastor is, even from the pulpit, you know, she preaches holiness, and that's something that is missing in the church. We preach about
but that's the red flag, though.
What you mean that's a red flag? That is not a red flag.
It is a red flag.
No.
Here go the red flag.
That is something that is missing. We don't preach about holiness anymore. There are a lot of pastors who don't preach about holiness anymore.
But that's what I'm saying. That's the red flag. When they are not preaching about holiness, they being ho-ish. That's the problem.
He said your pastor doing right. When they don't preach about holiness, it's a red flag.
But that's what I'm saying.
I don't know. I think I might want to disagree with that. There have been instances.
There we go, Mr. Bruce.
Once again, yeah, I'm just going to – we said we're going to keep it at 100 and keep it real and all of that, right? Okay. There's a famous pastor out of Louisiana named Jimmy Swagger.
Remember Pastor Swagger?
Yeah, he used to dog Jim Baker for doing, you know, for having some issues and some personal problems. And then he was caught himself some months later, you know, at a house of ill repute. So I'm gonna make this gender, because women in general, inside the church or outside the church, seem to have better control of themselves than we do. Let's talk about the men. And I think that it's learned behavior also for the women. I think that the women have looked at the men and said, well, what the heck? You can't beat them. You may as well join them kind of deal. So I think, once again, it falls back on us because God put us in charge. We were the head, and then we dropped the ball. So a male pastor that's single, okay, that's okay. That is a disaster waiting to happen to me over time.
Yes. Yeah. Preach.
Wait a minute. So you mean to tell me there can't be a single pastor?
I'm not
who
saying
is
that it can't be. I'm saying that why would you put yourself in that position? Because especially if you're very charismatic, you're a great leader.
Well, maybe
good looking.
Well, maybe. Yeah. Well, maybe he just got out of a crazy divorce and he needs.
Maybe he needs some time then to find a wife.
Yeah.
Because first of all, okay, let's say I want to get married. Okay, he's single. I go to him and I say, Pastor, I need counseling and I need. Okay, he doesn't have a wife. Or if he's divorced, he probably ain't the right guy to talk about. I'm just being real about those situations anyway. You know, he needs to have a successful relationship to talk about being successful in a relationship. That's just my opinion overall.
Yeah.
So I need him. Right. So, but I know pastors that are single and they struggle. And I mean, we have conversations. I know pastors that are married and struggle. We have conversations. Mm. They struggle with being faithful to their wives, because there's so many women also that are throwing themselves at them, and so it's all kinds of scenarios. I'm not saying it's kryptonite if a man has a wife. Sometimes some women are more attracted to a man with a wife.
And some of those wives, what they call cover girls.
Some of them covering up anyway
for him to go home to his husband.
Dr. G, you kind of just kind of glazed over that. You're going to have to – this cover girl thing, man, wow.
It's going to have to be a part three.
I was driving someone at the time. But you blew me away, man. You scared me with that one, man. Wow.
Yeah, he scared me. He almost ran off the road.
He is 100%. Dr. G is 100% correct on that. You would be – I mean, I grew up in this – you know, in the Orlando area, and you will be amazed of the things that take place.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to pastors, there's a lot of things that I know, and a lot of it I wish I didn't know. What I will say about male pastors, anytime that I see that a male pastor is single for, like, years and years, that concerns me. It really does. Because I don't believe – I believe that when you're in a role of pastoring – you really, especially if you have a large congregation or you have a congregation that does a lot in the community, you need a helpmate in order to fulfill the vision. You need someone that you can depend on and that will work the ministry with you. I think it's unwise. Yeah.
Do you have that same concern for a woman?
I do have the same concern for a woman. Absolutely, I have the same concern. If anyone that is in ministry and they are leading a large ministry, or I'm concerned. I would be concerned about it. Now, if they're just getting out of a previous relationship, there has to be a time of healing. It would be unwise to go into. I mean, whether you are a pastor or not, it would be unwise to go into another relationship and you're not gone through your season of healing and wholeness and deliverance. I believe it has to take place. But once you step out of that season, I believe that I think that for some men in particular that are single for a long period of time, it's because it's what they want to do. And it's because of the freedom that comes along with it. I think that there are a lot of pastors out there that are single and they're doing things that they should not be doing, entertaining relationships that they should not be entertaining. And so there's just a sense of freedom. They don't have any intentions of ever settling down. So I don't think it's the way that God intended it to be if you're in that particular.
That's men in general, not just pastors.
Right.
I
sorry. I'm sorry.
You need to quit.
I'm sorry.
And she's too
oh,
I don't think that that's the way that God intended it. I don't think that's the way that God intended it.
I don't think so either. I think we need a part three.
He said it's not good for man to be alone, didn't he? He said that.
Exactly.
No,
thank you.
Yeah. He didn't say how long, though.
Jeez.
But, Doc, the longer you listen.
Hey, Doc, you know.
Okay. He didn't say how long, though.
No, he did. You know that as well as I do, and this is just real talk. For a lot of pastors that have been in that season for a long time, there were opportunities that were presented to them, and they messed it up. They either chose not to, because God gives us free will. God may tell you and may speak to you that this is the person that you need to marry, but because they don't look the way you want them to look, you decide not to do it, and you miss out on your blessing. So I believe that that is taking place as well.
Well, guys, listen, that's our time. We got to move on. This subject is absolutely crazy. I don't know if y'all want to do a part three next week or not, but this is something that we need to keep the conversation going. You need to know exactly, especially those who are joining churches, and you have a single pastor. You need to, you need to post your joining, who you're joining to. You need to be led by God to make sure that you're in a spiritual Bible preaching church. Last thing I want to leave you guys is I want to talk about with breast cancer. Most of you guys have heard my story about my mother this week, but for those who have not heard, my mother suffered silently for years with domestic violence from the hands of my dad. We talked about verbal abuse, mental abuse. It was not just, domestic part, but it was a lot. It was a lot going on, not more siblings as well. We were raised in a house where my dad was very, very militant. And so he was really anal about a lot of things. And so that kind of just trans into abuse, and over the years, anger and frustration and resentment start to grow. Causing traumatic stress mother's body, and she just began to stress out. She was trying to, keep the family together, keep the church life together. My mom and dad at that time had two daycare centers, and so one daycare center was almost 200 kids, and then we had a center at our house with probably about 50 kids, and so it was a lot going on, and she was still trying to be the best wife that she could be. And my mother, just to be honest with you, very, very submissive, not talk at all. She was very, very, she just thought that this is what your husband wants. You need to just follow suit and do like you're. And on pretty all of it became just fine. And all of the ones I used. And she shared about wanting to get out, and she just kind of felt stuck. And so her idea, her exit plan was she wanted me, my brother at the time, to graduate from high school, and then she was getting ready to leave the relationship, leave the marriage. Well, guys, the only problem was my brother and I were just in elementary, so she had another 15 years to go through this abuse, and she didn't make it that long. It was too much. So in fact, what ended up happening is, of course, the damage was done, and it was too late. She started taking chemo. Chemo was extremely too strong for her body. Her hair was gone, eyes and her nails started discoloring, and she was getting worse week by week. And I remember talking to my dad, and I said, "Dad, is mom coming home today?" "No, mom not coming home today, son." I'm like, "Well, why? Well, what's the problem? I thought you said she was getting better." And so, weeks went by and her situation became worse. We had no idea. My brother and I had no idea how bad it was. And finally she
She won her battle against breast cancer in May 27th of 92. And today I'm speaking for her. I'm speaking for all of those, not just for my mother, but for all of those who have passed because of breast cancer or domestic violence. I'm their voice now. And so I want to challenge every woman that is out there, and breast cancer happens to men as well, but I want to specifically do a challenge for all women to go get a mammogram as soon as possible. In fact, I'm challenging as many women that can until November the 1st to go get a mammogram. I'm challenging 1,000 people to go get a mammogram and get checked. I think early detection, guys, is key. I believe if my mother had of went and seen the doctor, went and got the help, didn't feel like she was stuck, she could have got back her self-esteem, she could have been better, and she probably would have still been here. But unfortunately, that was not the plan. So, guys, do me a favor, go get a mammogram. Ladies, please, please. Some are not even old enough to, but you can do tests in the bathroom, in the shower, whatever you need to do. You need to do that. It's just domestic violence and breast cancer, guys. It's very, very personal for me. So I'm an advocate, strong advocate for, again, those who are suffering in silence. You need to speak out. If you're going through any type of domestic abuse, emotional abuse, you need to call the National Domestic Violence Hotline. There's 24/7 support. There's trained advocates that are available to take your call no matter what time of the day. You can reach them at 1-800-799-SAVE. You can call them and someone will be able to walk through the situation. If it fails, you can always dial 911 and get your voice heard. And again, please don't suffer in silence when there is help. Again, I've been saying this all week. You are never stuck. I don't care what type of relationship you're in. You're never stuck. I want to make sure that you get the help that you need. Guys, this is our show. Special thanks to Christina and Tracy and Bruce, guys. What an amazing show. I told you it was going to be bananas. And next week's going to be even crazy. I want you to join us next week. Every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for It's Complicated with yours truly, Dr. G. Davis. Guys, I want to wish everyone a great night. Again, please get tested and challenge a sister. See if some of you might need to get them, tested, get them checked out. Everyone a great night. And whatever you do, be safe. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night. Thank you.